We're live. What's going on, everybody? It's your boys from No Ceilings. My name is Corey Telba. I'm here with Tyler Metcalf, Stephen Gillespie. One of the biggest days of the year, boys. We have NBA draft lottery day. We get to finally figure out who is picking where, who's going to have the number one pick, who's dropping, who's going up. It's going to be a lot of fun. Are we excited, boys?
I'm pumped. I desperately need at least a little bit of certainty in this class that is just uncertain from basically top to bottom. So we'll finally have an order set. We'll start getting a little better idea of fit and more likely landing spots. And, you know, it's never a bad thing to have the number one pick.
It's never a bad thing to have the number one pick. Steven, talk to me.
Yeah, I'm excited too, man. I feel like this class, more than most in years past, that the draft lottery is going to influence big boards a lot more, where I think people kind of like historically have like stuck to their guns a little bit more. I feel like with the order being set, we'll probably see a lot more variance in where people were in this past rendition of their big board or, you know, mock drafts compared to what there will be in the ones to come.
Absolutely. So who are we thinking? We see all the guys waiting to, you know, in the in Chicago to see their destiny. They look like, you know, they're attending their school's chorus concert with their ill-fitting suits. I'm sure they'll have some better ones come draft night. But, you know, who are we thinking is our top group here? You know, do we think, you're talking about how like people's mocks are going to influence where people go, but do we think that there's a group who has kind of made themselves the top tier guys, or do we really think that this could be anyone's game here?
I think that we're probably going to see kind of the top three has been the top three for most of the draft process. I think if I had to pick one to fall out, maybe Risa Shea falls out of the top three, but I feel like, you know, Alex Saar and Stephon Castle, they're probably going to be up there, or Stephon Castle might be the dark horse to come up there, but I think Nikola Topic is obviously going to be a lock for one of the top three spots as well.
I mean, in my opinion, he should be. Yeah. I feel like I'm less confident. I feel like Saar is the only guy that I'm pretty confident is like going to be considered a consensus top three guy.
What has you so like in doubt about Topic being a not saying like your personal rankings, but like the way, depending on how the lottery breaks down, like what could make him fall?
Well, I think that, you know, people are going to be concerned with his shooting. And I just feel like you said, you know, maybe a team who is in need of a primary ball handler, maybe instead of Topic, they want to go with a Stephon Castle. Maybe they want to go with a Rob Dillingham. And so I just don't think it's a lock. Do I think it's likely? I would probably say it was likely, but I'm less certain about him being a lock. I mean, a month ago we had him, you know, like on multiple outlets going in the 9-10 spot, and we still have that. So the only guy that I think that you consistently see show up in that top three range has been Alex Saar throughout this whole process, because I think that people can just envision a 7'1" guy who plays defense as a safer floor. Whereas if Topic doesn't develop as a shooter, you know, maybe he doesn't return that kind of value. Maybe there's a little bit of the Josh Giddey effect. We see how people have been reacting to his playoff performance. I don't necessarily think that they are that similar of players, other than that they're tall white foreigners who are good passers, which I guess is a few things in common. But I think positionally, you know, like Topic, I think, is a little more, you know, quick, bursty, athletic, where Giddey is patient, big, a lot of like
rotting,
turn off guys' shoulders type of things. So it's, you know, and who knows? I mean, Risa Shea is all over the place. ESPN still sticking with him as the number one guy. Other people are completely, you know, out on him as a top five guy because of some of the struggles. So I don't, it's weird. I truly don't think outside of Saar that there is anybody else who is like a consensus top 3-5 guy.
What say you, Metcalf?
Yeah, and even just like thinking about how like our no ceilings big board has kind of been constructed month over month since the beginning. Sar has been number one basically from start to finish, but his average ranking has ranked anywhere from like 1.2 to like almost like 3.7. So he's still been at the top the entire time, but the average ranking with him, it's been all over the place, especially when you consider, you know, top 1, 2, 3 consideration. So kind of like Corey said, like when we're trying to put these guys into tiers, I think Sar is probably the only one who's going to be at the very top or near the very top, like in that top three for pretty much everyone, just because of the archetype, the potential, plus the production, and the highs that we've seen from him have been some of the most impressive stuff from anyone in this class. After that, though, it is a complete wild card, and is really going to probably be determined based on how this lottery goes. Anyone from Castle to Topic to Klingon to Shepard to Risochet, none of those would really shock me if they went too. Even guys like Buzelis and Holland, while I wouldn't take them that high, a lot of people have them that high. So
yep.
Would it be like incredibly shocking if the team that lands at two has those guys in, they have an awesome workout, they really impress, they're shooting well, they, you know, they interview well. It wouldn't be absolutely shocking if they ended up going number two as well. So when we look at kind of who goes in that top three, we're talking about like 10 different guys.
Yeah. And yeah, Corey, if I could ask you a question, real quick to Metcalf, my tier like 5 through 4, like I have a tier 5 through 14. It's like super interchangeable. But Corey, I got a question for you, man. So I think that postseason success is going to influence a lot of people's like kind of decision making as well. With what we're seeing from like Chet Holmgren, Evan Mobley lately, like he's kind of had like a mini evolution in the middle of these playoffs. Do you think that kind of cements Sar at the top of a lot of people's board because we're seeing these kind of not so thick, but very kind of like versatile, skilled big men having success in the playoffs in like the very beginning stages of their career?
I think it certainly helps. And I think Sar, I don't think Sar is in the same tier of prospect as either of those guys coming out. However, I do feel like he is almost a middle ground between both of those guys as far as what he brings to the table. Because like, you know, we all really liked Evan's passing coming out of the draft. We thought he was a really good playmaker. He still is. He's still a great passer. But we know that he struggled as a shooter. He's always been a hesitant scorer. It's not really his nature to be, you know, like loud and boisterous and this guy who is just going to be passionate and let me get the rock and go get a bucket. Chet has a little bit more of that to his game, but still kind of plays within the flow of the offense, but he never really had the same offensive question marks. And then Sar kind of, you know, you see him even in his, you know, not limited minutes, but limited minutes for the type of prospect that he is given, you know, his competition. Mm-hmm. He's shown a little bit of both because he could do similar things to what they do defensively. I think he's a terrific defender. I thought he was awesome in the playoffs. But I don't think he's at the same kind of like tier of defender as either of those guys yet. But offensively, you see him bust out the spin, you know, in the mid range, the fadeaway jumpers, the threes. I think he's got a little bit more of a quick trigger than a guy like Evan does. So he is kind of a middle between those guys stylistically. So I think that if you're a team who is in need of defense and you also think that you can get a guy who can fill this kind of role offensively, the one thing that we are seeing, these are not guys who are going to bring you home in a playoff setting. You know, like yep. You still need that perimeter creator. So I think people maybe might have a tempered expectation of, even if he reaches his offensive ceiling, of what kind of player that really is. Cause he's, you know, he doesn't have that thick frame of like a Joel Embiid, who, even though Embiid is much, much bigger than mm-hmm. he was in college, you could tell that he had like this crazy big frame, right? Like Sar's lower body is like pretty thin. But you know that he's not going to bring you home, but he might anchor your defense. So I think if you can get that, you know, I think a lot of fans of teams will feel confident in that and be excited about that much more so than if, you know, you're maybe reaching for a Reed Sheppard or a Dillingham who are small and have questions about, you know, you, maybe you see Garland kind of struggling in the playoffs a little bit, and you feel more confident with what Sarr can bring on a night-to-night basis in that setting.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And there's a lot of other player types that we're seeing. And Corey, I know that you've brought this up in the group chats and stuff like that as well. But outside of like Metcalf, if I could turn it to you then, outside of like what we see Sarr doing as like this multifaceted big man, I think that this class is like pretty deep at the guard position. And you're seeing it with your Timberwolves, Corey, seeing it with the Knicks, right? We're seeing a lot of teams have success with these smaller guards. Do you think that, I mean, obviously I feel like the answer is probably a little bit yes, but how much so do you think that these small guards succeeding in the playoffs is going to help the stock of like a Dillingham or a Sheppard?
I honestly don't think it's going to have a whole lot of effect, because like when you look at the, it's all about team context. And when you look at the Timberwolves surviving or, you know, thriving with Mike Conley, you know, he's also what, like a 17, 18 year NBA pro. So like the experience is there. He's played in a ton of different systems with a ton of different players. He's super experienced, super measured in his approach and everything he does. But then you look at everything around him and it's size, length, athleticism, and shot making. So
he's always had that.
Right.
Like even in Memphis, Zach Randolph, Gasol, Tony Allen, like he's always been surrounded by size and athleticism.
Right. Yep. So without that, it becomes a lot harder for these smaller guards to survive in the league unless you are super strong like a Jalen Brunson. But then you look at his shot making and again, the context that he's in with those really tough nosed defenders, positional size, incredible feel. So it's all about the context that they go into. I think it's really hard if you're bringing in one of these small guards to be your offensive creator, your lone offensive hub, like we've seen in Atlanta with Trae Young. There's just a very specific ceiling on how far you can get with that. And yeah, you can have a really good season, but I don't know if year after year you can really build a title contender with that unless that those surrounding pieces are absolutely perfect.
I think NBA teams are kind of, it's funny, like some things that like I've noticed is I feel like the draft community, we feel like it's almost our responsibility to like coach NBA teams on like which ways that they should be like looking at building rosters and stuff like that. But for the most part, I think that they kind of, you know, get it a little bit more than what we see. I mean, there's obviously like a bunch of picks that don't go the right way, right? But in terms of like looking at how successful this draft class is going to be, I feel like we all kind of see that, sure, it might not have the star power at the top, but it's the draft pick of role players, right? And there are a bunch in this year's draft class. And I think that there's a lot of talent that's going to be able to enhance an NBA team, maybe not right off the jump for the majority of them, but I feel like there are a couple of them. And Corey, I don't know how you feel about this, but do you think that like day one contribution should be prioritized a little bit more? Is it going to be, or is it still going to kind of be like ultimate upside is going to rule the day, do you think?
Well, I think it's team dependent and about, you know, the philosophy of the team. I think that mostly if you're relying on a rookie, you know, it's kind of a fool's errand. Most rookies are not going to be able to help you that much. I mean, I know that, you know, we've been trying to find guys that we can kind of compared to like Jaime Jaquez, but you know, Jaime's also a guy who not only was he, you know, mature in his game, but he is a guy who was athletic enough to be in the dunk contest. He is a strong and physical player. So it's like, it's a very rare thing, I think, for guys to even be able to physically handle the game. So one, there's the physicality aspect, and then there's the aspect of, can you think the game quick enough? I mean, you know, we just watched the G League Elite Camp yesterday, right? And they're going to have another game today. So we're going to see the combine. And it's like these guys forgot how to play basketball, you know, like they're in a pickup setting and everybody's trying to get theirs. I understand that it's hard, but it's like guys are like treating the ball like a magnet. They're all going to the same spot and they just don't know how to play necessarily. And these are some, most of the guys there are the older players that don't have that hype and potential, and you know, they're raw. Some of the guys are raw and young and whatever, but like a lot of them are guys who have been in college for a while, and they get into the setting and it's like, maybe it's jitters, maybe it's just the pickup style and there's not a lot of organized offense, and they just, it's ugly, it's, you know? So like, it's going to be ugly for a while for most of these guys. There's a few guys that I think will be able to help early. I think, you know, Klingon obviously is a guy who has potential to be, you know, a high level player, but also has experience winning two national titles. He has the size, right? Like, there's very few guys who are going to be in the league who can bully him physically, even though those guys exist. So I think there's a pretty scarce combination of both, but ultimately it's going to come down to like, if the organization likes a player, we see it all the time. Even if they don't necessarily believe that player can help right away, like, you know, we saw the Lakers take Jalen Huccifino, and you think of the Lakers as a team who is trying to win right away. You have LeBron, who's not getting any younger, even though I don't know if that matters at this point, right? Like, but they have a team that needs to win, and they still swung. Meanwhile, the Heat, they go a different direction. So it's all based on what the teams actually believe. But, you know, we'll see on draft night and how the order shakes out. Because obviously there are teams, you know, maybe a team like the Chicago Bulls who have this mandate to kind of be competitive. And they're probably going to be a late lotto pick team given their odds. But who knows? They jump up. Now all of a sudden you have to weigh different things, right? And maybe you can go based on more potential. So it'll be interesting to see how the actual lotto shakes out.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm looking at all these players, man, like right now they're getting ready to like determine the lottery. All the players and general managers and stuff like that that are representing the teams, they do not look like they're having a good time being there. I'm ready for the Bill Simmons body language. You know, like nobody was excited to represent their team in a draft class like this one to come out.
All right, let's take a look at some of the odds while we're here. The Pistons have the best odds at 14% at the number one, 52% top four. Wizards at two, Hornets at three, Blazers at four, Spurs at five, Raptors at six, Grizzlies at seven, Jazz at eight, Rockets at nine, Hawks at 10, Bulls at 11, Thunder at 12, Kings at 13, Warriors at 14. What is the chaos factor? Who jumping up into the top four brings the most level of chaos, Metcalf?
I think it's San Antonio. If they jump to the top, that's do they go Twin Towers with the two kind of dynamic Frenchmen? I think Portland jumping up to one would be really fun. Boy.
Can I get crazy? Like the Thunder go the number one seed, they advance to the second round of the playoffs, and at 1.5% chance to get the number one pick, they get Alex Starr. How wild would that be?
Is Houston they have his brother 100% OKC's this year, or is it like top two protected? Do we know?
Oh, okay.
Protected 1-4.
1-4, okay.
Got it.
Utah jumping up would be a lot of fun too.
Utah would be interesting because, you know, Danny Ainge is a guy who is not afraid to take raw prospects. Like, you know, I know for me, like I might not be a Ron Holland guy personally, but I know that like, you know, he is a swing, and we talked about it the other day on the No Ceilings podcast, Metcalf, that like Ron Holland is the type of guy who maybe if he reaches his potential can look like a Jaylen Brown. And who drafted Jaylen Brown?
That would be
Danny Ainge.
Yeah. Or does Danny have his guy and he knows that he can get him at 3 or 4, and we see a similar kind of trade down as to when they got Tatum. Not saying anyone in this class is Tatum, but he's been known to do some stuff at the top.
I think they would have to draft Reed Sheppard number one overall. That's just the rules.
I mean, they have a lot of guys based on the rules that they could draft in that scenario, Stephen.
That's true. But they're all, remember, there's different, like, there's the Midwestern ones. There's the, you know, Southeastern ones.
All right, so we got announcements coming here.
Yep, okay. Tatum. Commissioner Tatum, not Jason Tatum, is at the podium.
This is hard because as we're watching while we're on the stream,
yeah,
I might have a lag. Who knows? Plus, it's muted.
Portland did get number 14, so no surprises there. Sacramento at number 13. Mr. Murray does not look pleased.
Thunder from the Rockets, chalk so far.
Let's induce some chaos, you guys, please.
I'm way behind, so you guys talk to us.
All right, the Chicago Bulls. 11. Yep.
So far, chalk, nothing fun. Julian Phillips not enthused about it.
Might be a playing time issue. Ooh. Who knows?
Okay, Jazz
Utah at 10.
So Hawks jumped up.
That's a big deal.
Wow.
So Hawks have jumped into the top four.
Yeah.
That's big. Memphis at 9. Tayshaun Prince looking thrilled. San Antonio at 8.
So Spurs get the Raptors pick.
So they've dropped.
The Raptors dropped 2 from 6 to 8. So that pick's going to the Spurs.
Interesting. Portland at 7.
That's brutal.
Yep. There you go, Scoot. Oh, man. Charlotte at 6.
Oh.
So they fell, what, 4 spots? 3 spots?
Yeah. From 3 to 6. On Pistons.
Detroit at 5. Whoa.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
What is going on? This is a twice on Sim.
Not again. This is like the scene from American Pie for the Pistons.
Oh, so it's between DC, San Antonio, Houston, and Atlanta. Who picked that? Wow.
Wow. This is why we react live.
Dude, making out like bandits. Atlanta in the top 4.
That is brutal for Detroit.
You think they draft another point guard?
Who? Atlanta?
Atlanta, yeah.
Well, let's see where they actually end up.
Well, I mean, there's going to be no shortage of them, even at 4.
I'm Donovan Clingan to Atlanta. If they don't get one, don't hate that.
I don't hate that at all.
Man. Wow, okay, man. So Pistons.
They're going to go to commercial, right?
Yeah, they're
on. Yeah, they're at commercial. Yeah, they got the 2003 boxy suit commercial on right now for everybody listening to us on the podcast right now. Boxy so, boys.
So Pistons dropped from 1 to 5. Hornets dropped from 3 to 6. Trailblazers from 4 to 7. Raptors pick dropped from 6 to 8, so it went to the Spurs. Grizzlies dropped from 7 to 9. Jazz 8 to 10. And then everything after that looks chalk with the Bulls, Thunder, Kings, Trailblazers.
They flew Scotty Barnes there to not have he's never going to represent the team again. Bad vibes.
Man.
So San Antonio is going to have 2 picks in the top 8 in this year's draft class to pair with Victor Wembanyama.
Wow. So San Antonio is going to trade their 2 picks. Atlanta is going to end up with 3 picks in the lotto in their rebuild when they trade to the Spurs. Is that what you just said out loud, Steven?
That's not what I had said, but I think that I could have inferred unintentionally. Thank you for making me look super smart there.
Imagine
would you
that.
Do that? Would you do that? Have three top 8 picks in this year's draft class for Trae Young?
Maybe.
I might. Like, why not?
I mean, you get it all out.
This is not the best draft class ever, but neither was the 2013 and Giannis was in there. Like, what if you get the Giannis Antetokounmpo of this draft class that no one's expecting for trading away Trae Young, and you got other picks to kind of go along with them? And it's a deep roster anyway.
I think for... I think for me, I would wait to see where the Spurs ultimately land. Like, can they get Topic?
Yeah.
Right. Like, can they actually, you know, have a plan to where they can still accomplish some of the same things. Now, look, we saw that Wemby was so good this year.
Yeah.
That maybe it makes sense to get a guy like Trey who can speed things up and you build the roster around. They have money, I'm assuming. If not, they can move some of the pieces. So I don't know. I mean, I guess that's why it's nice to have a generational talent and flexibility. You have a multitude of ways that you can build out your roster from that point on. So,
Metcalf, do you like the microwave around Wemby idea? That's what I'm calling it. Like trading for like current talent to go along with Wemby.
I don't hate it.
Yeah,
that's why. Like I like the Dillingham fit with the Spurs more than other teams because my defensive concerns with him, I think, get pretty easily or quickly minimized just because of having guys like Wemby and Vassell around him. I think that cleans up a lot of stuff. It's a little easier to hide him. And then Dillingham proved that he can be a much better decision maker than what he showed before this year, scored on and off ball. So I think it makes sense, but as long as it's the right guy. If I'm the Spurs, I'm not just making a move to make a move.
I feel you. Well, we're back from commercial break, Corey. They are looking at all the teams right now.
And, well, see, this is why you turn off Sham's notifications, because, God, he's the worst.
Yeah, I don't have my phone anywhere near me right now. I want to be surprised. Yeah, well,
that's because you're a professional, and I'm just...
I'm not. San Antonio with number 4.
Oh, my God.
Well, there goes that theory. I'm not trading those two picks for 4. Houston, number 3. That's pretty wild, man. Washington with 2. Atlanta's got number 1.
Wow.
Even Fields can't believe it. He's just like Cheshire cat on the stage right now.
So that is one of the biggest jumps we've ever seen.
From reminiscent 10 to 1. Of the Chicago Bulls, right?
The Derek Rose year? Rostra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it? Yeah. Point something percent.
Wow.
0.9 maybe?
The Hawks had a 3% chance at 1.
Play to win the game.
That is incredible. Wizards stay put. Dude. Rockets using Brooklyn's pick jumped from 9 to 3. Spurs jumped from 4 to 5. That is holy cow.
That's a tankathon sim, dude. Like, this is the closest a tankathon sim could ever be to being correct.
Okay, so just to reiterate, the Atlanta Hawks have the number 1 pick.
Correct.
The Washington Wizards have number 2.
Correct.
The Houston Rockets at 3.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Spurs at 4.
Yep.
Pistons at 5.
Mm-hmm.
Raptors at 6.
Hornets at 6.
Hornets at 6.
Yeah, okay. Now the Spurs are 8 because of the Raptors. Okay.
So Grizzlies at 7. Wait, who's at 7?
Trailblazers.
Trailblazers at 7.
I have my TV paused for this.
Okay. Spurs at 8. Grizzlies at 9. Jazz at 10, Bulls at 11, yep. Thunder at 12, Kings at 13, Blazers at 14.
Yes.
Yeah. Man, 7-14 for the Blazers after their last year. There's going to be some solid picks like around there. That's just not what you want to see, though.
Wow, man.
Oh, holy hell.
All right, so what's your first impression here? I mean, obviously Landry Fields is happy. The Hawks coming off of a not so interesting season. Trade rumors: are they going to trade Trey? Are they going to trade DeJounte? Are they going to trade both of them? What's their plan? Now they get thrust with the number 1 pick. Now, if you're them, are you thinking, "Hey, we have the number 1 pick. We have these guys. Can we get a third star for the number 1 pick?"
I think,
or do we trade all those guys, get assets, rebuild, and we have the number 1 pick already to jumpstart it? I mean,
this reminds me of, you remember in the offseason where it was like a foregone conclusion that Anthony Davis was going to leave the Pelicans and go to the Lakers, and then the Pelicans just so happen to get the number one pick that same season. Like, is Trey to LA going to happen now? Because now I think that if you got the number one pick, like, it's not the same draft class and there's no Zion. Like, I get that, but I think it's easier for Atlanta to be like, hey, look, this ain't working. We got multiple ways that we can go. Trey's already kind of got a foot out the door. Everyone's flirting with landing him on their teams now. Maybe this is the best way that we can sell to our fan base now that we can move off of a really, really good player. Like, not slamming Trae Young at all, but I think this makes us a little bit more easier to digest the idea of trading him away.
I think the price for him went up.
Yeah.
Yesterday's price and not today's price?
I mean,
that's what they say.
Yeah, because I mean, pairing a guy like Alex Sarr with Trae Young is a lot more appealing than selling off Trae Young and Murray for picks and then trying to rebuild around pick 10. It's like, if the front office is done with Trae for whatever reason and they're like, all right, let's start this rebuild now, you have the number one pick who fits, I think, pretty nicely with Trae Young as is, with his athleticism, his defense, his rim protection, his rim running, all that kind of stuff. I think that Trae and Sarr fit. So if you're viewing it from a team building perspective, I don't think the Hawks have to by any means move off Trae Young. Not that they had to move off of him coming into today, but it would take, if I was the Hawks front office, it would take a much more intriguing offer for me to make that move now than it would have this morning.
And you get the luxury to say, look at all this that we have to work with now. So it's like gas prices around hurricane season down here in Georgia, right? Like, oh, it just so happens that gas goes up. I think that that's a great point that you bring up though, Metcalf, because you don't have to, but if you do, then you get like all these assets and maybe next year's draft class, you kind of flip, put a little bit of pressure on a team to get rid of their next year's draft class and an even better one. And then you have even more that you can work with down the line. And you could, I think, more easily sell a rebuild, because even with Sarr, I don't know if Atlanta like does enough to tread water. You know what I mean? With their current construction.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what direction they go. The flexibility, the rumors leading up is going to be interesting. I mean, obviously Hawks are the biggest winners. I guess the Pistons are the biggest losers.
Yeah, they have to be.
They were going to have one less big man now.
Falling out of the number one spot again is just brutal. I actually kind of like it for them, though, in terms of I think there are going to be some really good players who make a little more sense based on who's currently on the team. I know there's no one on that team that is guaranteed, besides Cade, to be a long-term option. But I still think there are going to be a handful of players there that really complement him.
In some ways, it almost like keeps them from like making the kind of decision that they would have been in a position.
It protects them from themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, like, there's not that, oh crap, we have all these, like, we have big men on our roster. And even though it's a bad draft class, Sarr is the number one guy and has been all year long. So we have to take him. Maybe now they kind of have a little bit more freedom to take a player that they would have wanted to take anyway without that level of expectation and the amount of like pressure or temperature it would put on their decision maker seats, you know?
Yeah, I agree 100%. And this is a really, really fun order here. Shout out to everybody watching with us live. We have over 2,000 people rocking with us live. If you are watching live on YouTube, make sure that you like and subscribe, share it. Let's get more people up in this stream. Make sure you comment and, you know, we'll try to get to some comments and some questions, here, but a lot of stuff that we got to scroll through to find our questions. We got Spurs fans that are happy, Pistons fans that think they got screwed. We got Jay Lick says Trae and Murray to Lakers confirmed. So he thinks that both of them are now going to go to the Lakers. So that'll be interesting.
When is the first mock dropping? Tanner Slag in the chat. Shouldn't be too far.